Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. When we hear the phrase fashion capital, cities like Paris, New York, Milan, even Los Angeles come to mind. Not Columbus. Even though our city is the leading metro in the country for professionals working in the fashion industry. Even though we're the corporate home to retail giants like Abercrombie & Fitch, DSW, Express, Victoria's Secret. Even though our college and design programs are churning out the next great generation of fashion designers and entrepreneurs. So we're going to talk about it this hour. From up-and-coming designers to mall fashion, we're diving into Columbus's connection to the fashion industry. And to kick off our conversation, we have Celeste Malavar Stewart, a local fashion designer and fiber artist. Welcome back to All Sides.
Thank you, Anna. Happy to be here.
Columbus is home to the third largest concentration of fashion designers in the United States. I got to admit, that surprised me. What do you think it is about our city that lures these people here?
Well, I think a lot of times when people talk about Columbus being third in fashion, I think we have to realize that we're third in the amount of fashion designers that we have here.
Yeah.
So it's not so much that we're, you know, at the forefront in terms of going out into the street and taking photos of people in fashion, but we just have the highest concentration, or the third highest concentration in the nation. And that's really because of things like L Brands, Victoria's Secret, you know, all of these Express, all of these corporations here that really attract fashion designers, whether they're working in corporate or independent. And a lot of times also the universities here attract fashion designers because we've got some really great fashion programs coming out of Kent State, CCAD, even Ohio State as well. So lots of us here.
And I think that's partially because Ohio has traditionally been seen as the perfect test market for America.
Yes. Yes, it's a great place to start. You know, I think a lot of graduates from our fashion program at CCAD, because I teach in the fashion department there, they stick around and they want to test it out here. And it's perfect. It's a perfect city to do that in.
It's not just fashion. It's also fast food.
Yes.
Like we get all kinds of test meals. We get test rebrands, too.
It's amazing. Yeah. Even slow food now, too. So it's fascinating.
Yeah. I guess they just figure the combination of people here in Ohio is representative of the rest of the country. And if it tanks here, it's going to tank nationally. If it succeeds here, it may succeed nationally.
Which is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. We're also that's a whole other conversation about whether Columbus is still an affordable city. But we are more affordable than places like New York, Paris, Milan, Los Angeles.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I grew up in San Francisco. We moved here from New York City. The rent is nothing compared to those cities. So it's absolutely still affordable. And it's also a city that's really open to collaboration. You know, we can get in touch with the city council president here. And you can't do that in these other cities as easily.
So. You've spoken about that, and I want to talk a little more about it, about the supportive culture here in Central Ohio and how it's been different from other places that you've lived.
Yes, it is. I've lived in many different places. I went to university in England as well, and just around the U.S. And there's something about the culture here that I really hope we preserve that is very open to talking to one another and collaborating, even across disciplines, which I think makes it just enriches the community. And there's so much support. Again, like I said, you can go to, the Greater Arts Council of Columbus, GCAC.
There we go.
You can go to GCAC and talk to anybody there about getting a grant or having, you know, any ideas in the arts. And doors are open. So Greater Columbus Arts Council is what I meant to say.
So. Yeah, there's also fashion organizations like the Columbus Fashion Council, the Columbus Fashion Alliance. And I feel like they've grown in tandem with this market here to support both the industry and the designers.
Yes, absolutely. they have. And it's really nice because I think there's a lot of room still for other organizations to fill certain niches. And we hope to start seeing all of the organizations start working together and collaborating to really create a bigger independent fashion hub in Columbus, because we have a lot of fashion designers in corporations, but we're really trying to build this community of independent fashion designers here, which is moving, it has momentum.
Of which you are a part of.
I am. I'm very happy to be. Yes.
Yeah. You make some amazing pieces of clothing with natural fibers.
Thank you, Anna. Yes. I love working with local farmers to obtain, you know, fiber. We have so many resources just locally that I don't even think a lot of fashion designers are aware of, or artists in general. So we're also trying to promote that you don't have to go very far to have some pretty amazing materials.
The Fashion Alliance also has a community makerspace, right?
Yes, it's wonderful. And they have a new building that they're moving into, and it's really exciting. We really have high hopes for them to really build a fashion community downtown.
The Fashion Council also helped grow the Columbus Retail Fashion District. It started in 2022, and it's actually part of Columbus's downtown strategic plan. So that's kind of that partnership we were talking about earlier, right?
Yes, yeah, and it's interesting. I think not many people know about that yet, so I think it will be nice to see, you know, more awareness of those stores downtown, and, you know, maybe more events will happen around that area, and it will be really nice to see that area really develop.
Yeah, so, well, for those who don't know, can you tell us a little bit about that area? Where is it? What are we going to find down there?
It's on 3rd. It's near the Commons, the Columbus Commons, very near there. And there's a series of small stores that are owned by independent designers that have their wares in there and their fashion in there. And I know they have different hours, but they're kind of the only thing in a way down there. So it's really a destination area if you are looking for gifts or fashion. So I'd love to see like cafes opening up down there and things like that, where maybe it draws more people into the area because you really have to know about it to go there. But they're there.
The city's also embraced the fashion industry here with events like Fashion Week.
Yes. You know, not every city has a fashion week, so we're really, really excited.
Maybe
really
listeners
happy.
Didn't know we have a Columbus fashion week.
They were at a time part of the CFDA, which is a big deal as well. So we do have a fashion week, and it's growing, and there's a new leader with the organization, and she's planning really big things, and I think it's exciting. It's exciting to see where they'll go next.
When is Fashion Week?
It's usually, you know, I should know this, and I don't think, but it's two times a year. Your Fashion Week is usually two times a year, but we have it usually in the summer. So there's Fashion Week then, and then but it's usually the beginning of the year and then towards the end of the year.
Yeah, we had you on a couple weeks ago talking about a fashion show that was going on at the Arts Festival, correct?
Yes, which was a huge success. And that's another area that we're trying to do in the city, where we're trying to show the intersection between fashion and art, which sometimes happens.
And about perhaps the intersection between fashion and fun, you also have an event coming up this fall, Highball Halloween.
Yes, it absolutely is fun. I have had the honor of being a judge for Highball Halloween twice in the years that I've been here, and it is absolutely so much fun. And it's really very costume. It's like very high-end costume, which I think is really fantastic, especially because it happens during Halloween, so it's perfect.
Yeah, there's a fashion show, right? There's a theme. Designers create costumes or outfits, and
yes.
I've looked through some of the photos. They are wild.
Yes, they do. They have one main costume, which is usually the big one, the big showcase costume, and then they have three sort of ready-to-wear costumes. So it's a fantastic show.
And it is something that the public can buy tickets, come attend?
Yes, and it's just getting bigger and bigger as it grows. And it's downtown in the Short North, actually, and it's outside, and it's a blast.
There is this tension, though, I think, in having this conversation, right? Like, so Ohio is known for the mall brands, right? Mm-hmm. We're known for L Brands, which has what is Express, Abercrombie, Victoria's Secret, The Limited. Yeah, yes. It's got a handful of like brands that if you were a child who grew up in the 90s and the 2000s, like these were the stores that you shopped in when you went to the mall.
Right, yes. They're no longer with L Brands. I believe that there's only one brand left with L Brands, but we all know those names.
Yeah, they all came out of here. DSW came out of Ohio. But then, you know, you, for example, you are an independent fashion designer. So there's, you know, when you think of Ohio, is it wrong to think of it as mall fashion?
You know, I don't think it's wrong because there is definitely a presence of mall fashion here and all of the headquarters are here. So it's definitely valid to think of us that way. But I also think that when we think that way, we only think in terms of fast fashion, where I think it's really important to know that there's a big slow fashion and independent design community here also that's thriving. And I think that there's a nice balance. It's really cool because, you know, we don't all have to do the same thing, obviously. And especially coming out of CCAD, I see a lot of students who want to be independent and not all want to go into corporate. So I don't think it's wrong to say that we are that and we should be known for that because it's a big deal. But at the same time, I think it would be fun to really highlight how we're also a very independent fashion community as well.
Yeah, and that's what the Columbus Fashion Council, the Columbus Fashion Alliance, that's what these organizations are really primarily focused on.
Absolutely, yes. And they do a great job highlighting all of us as well.
Yeah, because whether you love mall fashion or you hate it or you love to hate it, it's what a lot of us wear day to day.
Yeah, it is. Although the industry is changing as well, right? Like recently Express had to close down a bunch of stores and things like that. And the brick and mortar is changing. The idea of going to a store, a lot of us are doing online buying now. But I think what's happening as well, especially with these next generation of just people, not even just designers, but we're becoming more and more aware of what fast fashion has done and is doing to, you know, community, environment, economy, and everybody knows about Shein, right, and what that does. And so we're trying to, I think, really just give an option and help people realize like what our buying power is and what it can be and how aware we can be about the things that we decide to buy to put on our bodies. So
I think social media has really contributed to a lot of that because we can see artisans working in these clever and creative and fun ways. Like I follow a woman on TikTok who thrifts old tablecloths and turns them into these amazing tops and sundresses. And it's just such a fun recycling of these traditional tablecloths. But it's not something I ever would have found 20 years ago.
Yes, right. Yeah, I think it had a stigma 20 years ago.
Even, you know, your work or the work of up-and-coming designers, they have such a platform to share what they do with the world now.
Yes, and I'm so happy and proud of that because I think that is what also the Greater Columbus Arts Council in the last Columbus Arts Festival, they, for the second year in a row, made this platform for fashion and really highlighted the idea that fashion can intersect with art. And there are more and more platforms like that. The Decorative Arts Center of Ohio gave us a platform. So I think that the more that the community and organizations and, you know, city council, like our city council members, everybody involved that continues to create more and more platforms for fashion, I think we can begin changing that diaspora of what it looks like. So,
you know, Celeste, I want to ask you, do you have favorites, but are there some notable up-and-coming fashion designers in Columbus that maybe we should all be aware of?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. You know, I thank you for asking that question because we have so much talent here. And I think a lot of times people think you have to look to New York or L.A. or, you know, to find these talented designers. But we are here. So we have some wonderful up-and-coming designers. Tracy Powell is one of them who does beautiful, like, edgy, high-end fashion. She graduated from CCAD a few years ago. We have current graduates Chawis Salem, who does beautiful tailored garments that are very avant-garde. We have Logan Balduff, who does corsetry like it's nobody's business. And we have KC Emil Brown, who does amazing leather work and incorporates that into couture. So we've got some really, really big talents, and I'd love to see them stay here. And that's why it's important to create the platforms for them.
Yeah, how do we, outside of like Instagram and social media, is there like a clearinghouse? Is there a website? Are there places where we can go down the rabbit hole of Columbus fashion?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, I think there are more and more exhibitions that are happening. I think, obviously, if you go to Columbus Makes Art, they always have a list of the events that are happening. Columbus Fashion Alliance does a really great job of listing the events that involved, you know, designers, obviously, Columbus Fashion Council as well, obviously. So I think you can, Greater Columbus Arts Council, another place where you can find us, because Columbus Makes Art is a specific area under GCAC where they actually give you profiles of different artists. So if you wanted to look up, you know, who are the designers here, and you can look us up in the city.
That was Celeste Malvar Stewart, a local fashion designer and fiber artist here in Columbus. Thank you as always.
Thank you so much, Anna.
Coming up after the break, from Abercrombie to Express, we're talking about Columbus's connection to mall fashion. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking this hour about Columbus's place in the fashion world. And we can't talk about Columbus and fashion without talking about malls. Because Columbus is the home to brands like Abercrombie, Express, Victoria's Secret. Some might say Columbus is the center of mall fashion, or at least it was in the 90s and early 2000s. Joining us now from Paris is Dana Thomas. She's the author of Fashionopolis, The Price of Fast Fashion and the Future of Clothes. Welcome back to All Sides, Dana.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
So let's start with Express, because Express has just filed for bankruptcy and it's closing its stores. And I think that tells the larger story of what's happening not only to malls, but mall fashion. Were you surprised when Express went under?
No, I wasn't surprised at all. The company that owned it, the limited company, which later was called L Brands,
yeah,
has had trouble for a long time. And, you know, Victoria's Secret filed for bankruptcy and then did get reorganized. And the limited, of course, is long gone. So, you know, these were heyday brands when malls were in their heyday in the 1980s. But they've been on a very slow but sure decline ever since then. And the fact that so many malls are closing, and that was where they were, showed that they just didn't have the reach and the audience, the consumer base anymore to stay afloat.
I want to talk a little bit about how fast fashion figures into that, because, you know, I can remember, not to date myself a little bit, but like you'd get a new collection in the spring, in the fall, or maybe you'd get one three times a year. But now, especially with the rise of companies like Zara, you get new releases every couple of weeks. The store almost entirely changes over.
Every week.
And I wonder, you know, some legacy brands have adapted to that, but some of them have fallen by the wayside. And I wonder, when we talk about designers and about fashion, that has to be changing the role of corporate designers, people who want to work as fashion designers, because you don't get 6 months to build a collection. You get 6 days.
If even it's a constant flow. There isn't a collection so much as you're just churning out product. And, you know, it's the difference between being, you know, in journalism, being on the daily newspaper, the weekly newspaper, or the monthly newspaper, or the monthly magazine, and or writing books. You know, it's that kind of same schedule. And now most of what we think of as mall fashion, accessible fashion, is on the daily schedule, and that they're just churning out new stuff every day. There's something new coming into production, something new being drawn up, something new being explored, and something else being cycled out. You know, if it's not selling, if it doesn't hit hard and fast, within a week, it's pulled off the floors, or they just stop making it and they sell out what they've had, and that's that. Move on. Next, because they're just looking for the next big hit, you know, the wonder item. And sometimes they come along and they blow up on Instagram. Sometimes they blow up on the street. But they, you know, that somebody sees something and then suddenly everybody has to have that coat. But sometimes they just get passed over and zoom, it's out and something else is new. There's no idea of collection in fast fashion, the business model for fast fashion brands like Zara and H&M and Mango and even The Gap. It's now just constant churn.
How do you think that's impacted traditional mall brands?
Oh, tremendously, because they still were working on the spring, summer, fall, winter schedules. And it's interesting because mall brands, I mean, not the ones out of Columbus, but the old ones that were, I knew, I grew up not far, just down the road from King of Prussia Mall, when it was the world's largest shopping mall. And that's where I spent my Saturdays, you know, being what Calvin Hobbs called a mally, you know, just cruising the mall.
And it was mall rat in my generation.
Yeah, mallies. Isn't it kind of cute, mallies?
Yeah.
And you know, we'd go to the merry-go-round, and we'd go to the Gap, and we'd go to a couple other brands that are long gone. And then we would go get a slice of pizza and or maybe hit the Purple Cow for an ice cream cone. And, you know, go to that little kiosk in the middle and get some new earrings and for our pierced ears, where we'd gotten our ears pierced. But all of those stores were definitely, they were Seventh Avenue companies. They were, you know, out of the New York garment district. And they lived on the schedule of fall, winter, spring, summer collections. And the garment district is gone because all of that manufacturing went offshore. And then the rise of Zara and H&M and the other great big fast fashion companies, Forever 21, which was a mall brand, but nevertheless, they changed the whole rhythm because they weren't working on the fall, winter, spring, summer cycle. And they weren't even making things in the garment district. They were making things in Bangladesh. So and in North Africa and in Mexico. So, you know, it's a completely different business model. And the other thing that's very interesting is those brands, part of their allure is that they are out on the street and they build these almost like fashion emporiums, these huge, you know, H&M stores are gigantic. I remember when Topshop came to New York, what a big deal it was, and they had a huge store, and they're luring you into these big stores on Fifth Avenue and on, you know, major thoroughfares, the same way malls used to lure us to the mall. And now we just go to this main street and we walk the main street or the big main avenue, the same way that, you know, when I was a kid, we walked down the main strip, you know, the main hallway of a mall.
Oh, that's a good point. Particularly here in Ohio, Easton seems to be the one mall that is doing well. It's outdoor. It's got outdoor, that faux downtown feel. And yep. So, right, you walk down the streets, there are restaurants, there are movie theaters, there are all kinds of, like, from low fashion to high fashion. And it feels like a mini city in a way.
I got to know Reston, Virginia. My mother was living in Reston, Virginia. And I watched how that little town center of Reston, Virginia evolved over 20 years into basically a giant outdoor mall with what used to be mall brands,
yeah,
and then some local restaurant chains in the Washington DC area opened their branch out there by Dulles Airport, and then there was an ice skating rink in the winter and the movie theater and everything like that, like you had in a mall, like Tyson's Corner down the road, but it was outdoors and it felt more like a town than it did like a a center, a gigantic shopping center. It didn't feel like a shopping center. You felt like, okay, there's offices here, there's homes around the corner. It's not just like this shopping bubble. And the shopping bubble has lost its appeal. But also, you know, in the car culture, there's so much traffic. Let's just put it frankly, there's so much traffic now. Who wants to get in their car, as I write in Fashionopolis, drive to the mall, drive around looking for a parking space, then go walk through the mall, walk miles and miles in the mall to get to the store, to get this one thing or two things or three things, walk miles and miles back to your car to sit in all that traffic. And nobody wants to do that anymore. It's not fun.
Yeah. And one thing I did the last time that we had you on that we talked about, and I feel it's important to mention, is that if you do a lot of online ordering, you buy a couple of sizes and you send it back, very often that doesn't go back into rotation. That gets like trashed in a way that's like really depressing.
Yeah. So the idea of these stores being in town centers or being downtown or being in, whether it's, a main Broughton Street in Savannah or F Street in Washington, D.C. or Fifth Avenue in New York, or that, you can go look at them and you'll see other things around. It's not just the shopping bubble.
Yeah.
And that's really an important shift sociologically and commercially that mall brands couldn't quite keep up with.
One of the other shifts that I've seen in mall brands that I want to talk about, I actually think is a shift for the better, is more inclusivity in sizing, in shaping. I'm a child of the 90s, and I was born in the 80s, grew up in the 90s and early 2000s, and I can remember Abercrombie being even selective down to the point of who they would hire in their stores, what kind of aesthetic the employees had to have to even get a job.
Absolutely.
To sell the clothes. Now Abercrombie has a Curve Love line. They have much more inclusive like sizing and modeling. So it's been a real revolution, I think, in the last 25 years.
Oh, definitely. I remember Abercrombie when it was on Fifth Avenue in the 50s, in the 90s, and there'd be a velvet rope and bodyguards out front, and people lined up around the corner to go in, and they had a DJ playing, and it was like you were going into a nightclub. It was in the middle of the day. It'd be 10 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock in the morning. You were going into a nightclub to go shopping, which is very funny, in fact, because Abercrombie originally, and I remember this from the 80s because I'm old. I'm not old, but I'm not young. Abercrombie was a very chic, preppy company. It was like Brooks Brothers. And it's where like Ernest Hemingway used to go get his hunting gear. And
that's why it has the moose.
And that's why it has the moose. And you would go in there like, that's where I would go to find my father presents for Father's Day. Because it was like, oh, here's a very beautiful little leather billfold. Or here was a beautiful box to keep cigars in. Or, it was very manly masculine, but like old school masculine, like pre-war masculine, like 1920s Great Gatsby-ish, right? So when it pivoted in the 90s to this like sweatshirt, teenage nightclub thing, it was like, whoa, what happened? And it lost the Finch part, Abercrombie and Fitch. It was a burst of adrenaline for the company, and it became a thing. But of course, anything that burns that like a firework, anything that burns that high up that fast, eventually is going to go down. And it did.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. That is a company that Les Wexner, based here in Ohio, he went through the rebranding on that. He also went through the rebranding of Victoria's Secret from like this generic catalog selling lingerie into what it became. He created
the girls with the wings. Exactly.
He created this whole narrative around Abercrombie, this whole aesthetic around Victoria's Secret.
And it was all very sexy.
Yeah, however you feel about Leslie Wexner, he was very good at tapping in to telling you a story in that era.
Yeah. Again, I remember when Victoria's Secret first branch, arrived in the malls, and there was one on F Street in Washington, D.C., and it was very Victorian-y feeling. And
I love that people used to think there was a Victoria.
I know, there was a Victoria, and it was, it felt Victorian. And then somewhere in the 90s, it pivoted again to like hot sex. This was like just one step down from like Playboy girls, right? Like this was like,
and the angels, like that fashion show for a decade or so was like must-see television for a certain segment of the population.
I went once, and I went twice. I went twice. I went once in Paris, and the entire audience was like, it wasn't just men. It was like, do you know in those cartoons, like the Looney Tunes, when you have the wolf with his teeth and he's like and he and it, and he's drooling? Yeah, it was like a whole room full of wolves, drooling wolves. And then I went one time at the Cannes Film Festival where they flew the models down on the Concorde from Paris, which is kind of silly because it's only an hour-long flight. You don't need to go supersonic. And the plane was pink, and like they'd done this whole thing. And Sean Penn was in the front row, and he was like the wolf drooling. It was like, I cover fashion shows for a living. I was like, where am I?
They were
Where am
awesome.
I?
Yeah, I remember watching them growing up as a teenager, and that's a whole other conversation about body
That's a whole
image and
other
the message it was
conversation.
communicating. But
Wow.
they're completely changing from the Angels. They have a much more, they've tried to rebrand much more inclusive, both in terms of size and shape.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's not all about the Wonder push-up bra, which was a thing, which was quite
Oh
amazing
my
when they
gosh, that
came
was
out with that.
huge when I was growing up.
Huge, huge. Yeah, I remember writing about it for the Washington Post back then, and speaking to the fit expert. Her name was Monica, and in Columbus, Ohio, and doing this whole story about how to find the perfect Victoria's Secret fabulous push-up
Oh
bra,
my goodness. I didn't
mega bra.
realize that that was something that actually got like its own article at the time.
Oh yeah, no, it was a thing. It was a thing. Monica, the bra girl from Victoria's Secret. She was great.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's, you know
I spent a
what?
lot of time calling Columbus, Ohio for stories then. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, look, regardless of what you think about mall brands, like I said earlier, whether you love them, whether you hate them, whether you love to hate them, they are a way many Americans still dress to this day. They had a real place in the zeitgeist and the conversation around fashion, especially in the 90s and early 2000s.
Ann Taylor
J.
and
Crew.
J. Crew and absolutely, I mean, and The Gap, of course.
Oh, yeah. These are all
Yeah.
brands that we're raised on.
Banana Republic.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Old Navy.
There's, and now they're all owned by what is it? Like Athleta, Banana Republic. What is the other? Is it Old Navy? There's like tiers, right, of who owns what now. They're all nested within each other.
They're all nested within each other. Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Now, what's most interesting was that Forever 21, which was a mall brand, went under, had suffered bankruptcy a couple of years ago. And I thought this was like an interesting change in the business model. The mall co company owners, Simon, they're the ones who build and own malls,
Yeah.
bought the store, bought the chain so that it could continue to have it in malls. And I thought that was a really interesting pivot in the mall business from a business standpoint, that they weren't just landlords for companies like Express and the Limited and J. Crew, but they were also now going to be owning the companies that they were housing in the malls, that in
Probably a
order
concern about empty storefronts.
empty storefronts.
You
Exactly.
walk through any mall now, like certain malls, even here around Columbus and in central Ohio, and you will see just empty storefronts. You go, what's fascinating to me is you go on a Saturday, and when you would expect traditionally, like growing up, they would be packed to the gills and there's hardly anybody there.
No, and it's interesting. When I was working on Fashionopolis, I came across a YouTube channel of a guy who goes to derelict malls that were malls when I was a kid that were really well known, like the Christiana Mall in Wilmington, Delaware, and I can't remember some of the others, but like malls that I knew the names of. And there was one downtown in Philadelphia, and he goes around to them and he films how they've just been abandoned and derelict, and there might be like some offices, like businesses, like people doing mending for and delivering it to you. Like they get the space for cut rent rate, and otherwise the plants are dead and the places have been gutted and people came in and scavenged the door handles. And it's really amazing to watch on YouTube these sort of carcasses of malls.
Yeah, because if you think about just from a sustainability standpoint, what it took to build them and how much
Absolutely.
real estate they occupy.
And some are now being converted into retirement communities.
Oh my goodness.
because you can because everything's on one level, so you can make them into a place where people can get around really easily. And some of them are being used for exercise centers, you know, indoor in the winter, and you can go because you can walk miles indoors. And I mean, there's all sorts, they're being repurposed in all sorts of interesting ways. There was one out in outside of Washington, D.C., out in Loudoun County, that was being repurposed in a really interesting way that, like, has become a community center with playgrounds and preschools and stuff like that. Like, the town says, okay, we have this big empty space in our town. What do we, how can we use it to our benefit?
So I want to circle back as we close out our conversation together, is about Ohio's place in the fashion world. So when you think of Columbus and you think of Ohio, and where do you see it fitting in the greater world of fashion?
Well, it's always been the seat of what I call middle market consumer, middle market fashion, or fashion for the middle market consumer. That you have super high fashion for the higher end. You have fast fashion for teenagers and college, you know, people with not much disposable income. But it's always been sort of the solid middle class, middle market consumer place to shop. Those brands that come from there, you know, you want to have nice stuff that lasts. You want to have st nice stuff that has a bit of fashion, but not too much. And a little bit of sexy, but not too sexy. It's, you know, in the end, it's middle America. It's Midwest, even if Ohio is officially considered the Midwest. From Philadelphia, it certainly felt like the Midwest. And it's, you know, bankable. It was always bankable, reliable. You knew you were. I mean, I still have things from the Limited from the early 90s that every time I put them on, I'm like solid, good clothes that I can wear anywhere, even in Paris.
That was Dana Thomas, author of Fashionopolis, The Price of Fast Fashion and the Future of Clothes. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Anytime.
Coming up, we're going to hear from the future of fashion design. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking this hour about Columbus's connection to the fashion industry, from retail giants like Victoria's Secret to the local Columbus Retail Fashion District. Now, we're going to talk about the future of fashion in Columbus with an aspiring fashion designer. Aspen Grazer is a fashion design student attending the Columbus College of Art and Design. Welcome to All Sides, Aspen.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess first and foremost, what drew you to fashion as a career?
I grew up like loving fashion. My mom was very well educated in fashion. And so I grew up with all these vintage clothes that she had collected over the years.
Oh, that's great.
And kind of studying those and just like vintage like movies. And then I saw a big pull for sustainable designs, just longevity in clothes, because the clothes that I saw in stores were expensive and then they would wear out really quickly. And so I wanted to make clothes that were timeless and would last and would still be really fresh.
So hearkening back to the vintage clothing that your mother had.
Yes.
I have to ask, were you able to wear your mother's clothing? So my mother is 5 feet tall. And I am 5'9", so I could never wear all the beautiful things my mom had.
My mom was 5'9", I'm 5'9", I wear...
Ah, you lucked out.
Yeah, half my wardrobe is also her wardrobe.
You won the lottery in that case. So how did you end up at the Columbus College of Art and Design?
So I've lived in Columbus my whole life, and I took the CCID has a program for Saturday morning art classes for grades like K through 12. And so I started in first grade, and I took them all through my senior year of high school. And I took a bunch of different classes. I took comic classes with an amazing professor there, Brian Moss. He was incredible. And so it gave me a love for the college. And then after that, I realized, oh, fashion is actually the thing I'm like most interested in. But it gave me a good background there.
So you're in college, you're working through this. Where do you see yourself going after you graduate? Would you want to start your own sustainable? Would you want to go work for a sustainable fashion company? Like what would keep you in Columbus and what might push you to leave?
I think most people should try to leave their hometown.
I think that's fair.
Even if you go back to it, I think just having that exploration. So my eventual goal is I would love to go to grad school in Italy. I'd love to study textiles. But I might come back to Columbus because it's so expensive anywhere else. And so staying in Columbus is more economical. And it gives you a bigger platform to create change. In a larger city, your voice can get like drowned out so easily because there's so many people. But in a smaller place, like you can have your voice heard more easily.
What do you think of the independent design community here in Columbus?
I have met some of the most incredible people. Like a lot of my peers are just the most talented individuals, though, whom I really, really look up to, and they've taught me so much and have encouraged me. So I have a really amazing community here already, and it's just amazing seeing where they could go in the future and knowing that I got to know them first.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask a little bit about sustainability because you talked about that being important. You know, we've talked in a past show about the difficulty of making an all-American hoodie. How do you balance the affordability factor with the sustainability factor?
So a big thing that I do, because I would love to be able to source really beautiful luxury materials that are sustainably made and out of, you know, biodegradable materials, but I am a college student with not a lot of money. So my way of combating that is I get a lot of dead stock fabric. So most of my fabric is maybe not the most sustainable material. Like some are synthetic, some is, you know, dyed with non-natural dyes, but it's fabric from estate sales, it's from church sales, it's from thrift stores. And then, so even though the fabric itself is not the most sustainable, it would go to a landfill anyways. So I'm buying 3 yards of canvas for $6, and then I'm giving that new life instead of having it be just thrown out.
I love that. I mentioned earlier in the hour that I follow a woman on TikTok who collects vintage tablecloths and converts them into tops and dresses.
I know exactly who you're talking about, and I absolutely adore that. And it's mindfully giving new life to vintage pieces that maybe like meant something to someone, and you're giving that a new legacy.
Do you have a favorite era of vintage fashion, or one that you draw the most inspiration from?
I have multiple. I would say that my favorite that I get very direct inspiration from is the 80s. I love the 80s. I love how ridiculous and over the top it is. But a big inspiration to me is actually the 20s. So I love Art Deco. I love the intricate beadwork. And I also love how that was really the first time in fashion that you saw fashion being very directly related to rebellion, especially for women. It was an era where they could have more freedom of expression and not be so tied to, corsetry is beautiful, but it was also very restrictive at the time.
Yeah, it was also one of the first times women cut their hair short for fashion.
Exactly. And they showed, you know, a little bit of calf, very scandalous.
Yeah. So something that we've talked a lot about this hour and in previous is about fast fashion, and you're the demographic for fast fashion, right?
Yes.
It is addressed specifically to young women who might buy a dress to go out and then never wear it again. What do you make of fast fashion since you are the target market?
Fast fashion is, I do not fault anyone who falls because it's so easily accessible. You can buy it online. They have most likely exactly what you want. It comes the next day and then you can wear it immediately. For me, it's very disappointing because I think it has caused a sort of downfall in the excitement of personal style, because sometimes finding pieces that are not exactly what you want, but then learning how to work with it and style it in a new way is such a great form of like personal expression. And then fast fashion also was the death of mending clothes. You don't have to, you know, if your jeans get a hole or your shirt like gets some wear in the elbow, you don't repair it or you don't keep wearing it. You just throw it out because you can buy a new one. And I think that going back to mending clothes would be a huge step into realizing that, oh, I don't need to buy a new shirt as soon as it wears out. I can keep using it.
Oh my goodness. The guy who resoles my shoes is getting pretty darn old, and I am so worried about what happens when he retires or passes away.
I have the same problem. I've resoled a couple pairs of shoes because I love them, and it's like, I get so attached to the pieces that I buy that I'm like, I could never imagine just throwing it away if it got a hole. I get very upset when my clothes get holes, and then I fix them.
Yeah, the funny thing is, you know, you always see those, you can buy them new in store, the blazers with the elbow patches. But the elbow patch, even though it's a design feature, it was a practical thing of that's where the suit or the blazer is going to wear out. That was put on there to increase the longevity of the piece.
Exactly. And it's like you have all these design elements that are very interesting elements, like the elbow patches and like certain zippers or pockets. And they're design elements, but they're also functional. And what the thing that frustrates me the most with fast fashion is they've taken the function out of clothes. So fake pockets are
bane of my existence.
I can't stand them. But they're just seen as a design element instead of something that is a huge part of function in clothing. And then you pair that with fabrics that are not only quick to wear down, but they're also bad for your skin, and then they're bad for the environment. And so the function of clothes has just completely depleted because of fast fashion. Your clothes should be functional and also very stylish, and fast fashion has taken the function out of clothes.
I will say, though, not so much in defense of fast fashion, but it does allow you to experiment and perhaps in some ways maybe discover the kind of fashion person you want to be.
I can definitely see that. I think I try to avoid fast fashion as much as possible. You know, sometimes I have to go to H&M to get that pair of jeans that I know will fit me. But I think when it comes to experimentation, thrift stores and resale shops are so important because they have clothes that are, you know, trends are at such a fast cycle that thrift stores are really full of fast fashion now. And then they're also full of really amazing pieces that sometimes you just have to look a little harder for, which I think can be a much more economical and more sustainable way of experimenting with new looks.
How do we find your work if we're curious? If someone's listening and it's like, you know, I'd really like to know what kind of work Aspen is doing. I'd like to see what she does.
I am kind of sparse on social media, but I have an Instagram. It's just Aspen_Grazier. And I post a lot of my work there. And then I often wear the work that I make. So if you ever see me, chances are I'm either wearing something vintage or something that I have made myself.
Are you wearing something vintage or that you've made yourself today?
I am not wearing something I made today, but everything I'm wearing is vintage. It's an 80s blouse and a 60s miniskirt.
There you go. I'm still adjusting to the idea of 80s as vintage. It's okay. It's okay. No, I realized the other day I have a denim jacket that is 22 years old. And it's okay. I bought it when I was 18 and I still love it.
And that's the importance. If you still love it, then you should still wear it and it doesn't matter.
And it's generic too. It's not generic. It's got some stylizing.
It's timeless.
But yeah. In a way that, you know, the oversized denim jean jacket that was really popular like a year or two ago, I tried one on and I just thought to myself, you know, this is something I'm going to wear for a season and then I'm never going to wear it again. Do I need to buy it?
And that's a really important thought process to have when buying too.
So what do you see as the future of Columbus and its role? Because we were the capital of mall fashion. And with the decline of malls, where do we go next?
I remember going to Tuttle Mall when I was a kid. It was like the place to be. I remember like window shopping at all the stores that, you know, I was too young to really buy clothes in yet. And so seeing the downfall of that was kind of alarming, especially going back now. I think the future really is at resale shops. There's some amazing ones in Columbus. You've got Second Chance, and you've got Smarty Pants in the Short North, and you've got Flower Child. And so that's where you can find really incredible pieces that are secondhand, but they're still up to date. And then you can find vintage fashion. And I think the death of malls is very sad, especially as a social aspect, but there's still places that you can go to find what you want.
That was Aspen Grazier, a fashion design student attending the Columbus College of Art and Design. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
And thank you all for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.